Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I know it's throwing me off slightly because it's that time of the year where you can't really watch certain films because you need the Atmos. You know, you can't necessarily watch, like, I don't know, trying to think of an example, but I guess horror films. Like, you can't watch a horror film in the daytime.
No, that is probably true because it adds to the atmosphere, doesn't it, really? Yeah, so I think you're probably right there. There are some films that you can watch at any time during the day, others. They just need to be viewed at a certain time, don't they?
I tell you what, though, I remember watching, is it The Strangers? I think it's The Strangers, where it's like a home invasion film.
And oh, right.
Yeah, so I think it's The Strangers. And I watched it, it's when I was working somewhere else and I had like a weekday off, which was very unusual. So no one else was off and I was watching it.
Oh, right,
must have been about like 11 o'clock in the morning. And because I wanted to create the atmosphere, so I shut the curtains and made it as dark as I could. And I was watching it and I was still genuinely scared, but it was quite weird it kind of finishing and then me kind of carrying on with the rest of my day.
You go to a lot of trouble, don't you? You love setting the scene, don't you?
Definitely.
You see, I just don't have the wherewithal to do that. But I know what you mean, though. It's got to create a mood. But that's not something you can do in the cinema, is it? Because you go to the cinema, and it's in darkness anyway, isn't it? You know, so that kind of kills it a little bit. But you can do that more when you're at home, can't you? I think that's an interesting perspective, Chris. You've given me a lot to think about here, you know.
There you go.
Really, only 5 minutes in, and you've already got me thinking. Honestly, already really.
Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the best way to enjoy horror films, you know, shut your curtains. And if the Amazon man comes to the door, you just don't answer it. No.
I know. Yeah. I mean, it's about getting into the spirit of things, isn't it? Literally.
It is.
Wow. Yeah.
Well,
scary.
We are back with episode 4 of UK Film Club. How exciting. It's the show that reviews everything, really. We review right from the top, right down, not to the bottom, because that sounds bad, but to the shortest, to short films, you know, to the indie films.
Yeah.
And if you haven't listened to the show, it's your first time, welcome. Welcome to the show. Me and Brian are critics for UK Film Review, and in these episodes, we like to cover the cinema releases, largely by Brian. And then we do a streaming pick, so a film that's on streaming services. Then we do a couple of indie films. And then we finish up with a nostalgia film, which is something that basically is a little bit older, I guess. There's not really much. And funny enough, the film that we picked this for this month is another bleak film. We did Fight Club last month. And I'm thinking, we've got to stop picking these bleak films.
We've got to cheer ourselves up a bit next month.
I know. You can imagine myself sitting in the dark, watching these films, getting all depressed. Like, I need something happier for next month.
You need a bit of light and shade, don't you?
we'll get to that. And in this episode, very specially, I, everyone, round of applause, please, made it to the cinema. And Brian was there to witness
it. I was there.
This.
I witnessed it. I actually saw you go in. Yeah. I sat next to you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we were very privileged to watch the media premiere, I guess, of the new Fast and Furious film, Fast X, which is really good. I reviewed it for the site, and I know that Mad Wolf, they also reviewed it for the site. So I think it's my one that you'll see up there. So we'll get into that in a minute. But I think, oh, first off, just got a quick promo. I love a bit of promo. So Picture House got in touch to say that they are promoting the Sundance Film Festival London for 2023. And that's taking place in July, the 6th to the 9th. So yeah, we put a shout out on our stories. Although when you're listening to this, it's probably already gone. But yeah, it was on there. But you can go to Picture Houses with an S at the end, which is a bit strange. Picture Houses.
Really? Oh,
I wonder who's got Picture House. Someone.
Yeah.
Someone's got it. Picturehouses.com/Sundance, and you'll be able to see the lineup. Interestingly, there's a short film showcase, which a lot of the festivals do. And one of the films in there is My Eyes Are Up Here. And that was recently reviewed on the website by William Hemingway. And he loved it. And he's not an easy critic to please. So, yeah, he does give his fair share of low scores, shall we say.
Like,
so
we like to be constructive, don't we?
We do. And don't get me wrong, William's a really great writer. Yeah. So for him to sort of give this 4 stars, I'm thinking, wow, that must be something.
Spare praise indeed, then.
Yeah. So that's part of the lineup at the Sundance Film Festival London. So, yeah, just shout out to those guys for getting in touch. And, yeah.
Good stuff.
That's in July. So, shall we go with the theatrical releases and then do Fast X last? Does that work? Because I know you had some other films that you were going to review first. So let's do those.
Okay then. All right. So we do my five for this month. What order do you want me to take them in this time, Chris?
I'm gonna direct you this time. I don't know why. Because normally I let you go at it free reign, but I'm a bit more organised this time.
Nice,
so I'm gonna
one.
Go.
Yeah.
Well, as long as you have seen them.
yeah, of course I have.
Big George Foreman.
Oh, Big George Foreman. Right. Okay then. So, right. Big George Foreman, I want to give you the full title here because I don't know how they managed to get it on the poster. But the full title is Big George Foreman, : The Miraculous Story of the Once and Future Heavyweight Champion of the World. 16 words. I mean, honestly, did they need a subtitle quite that long? It's beyond me. I mean, surely Big George Foreman kind of does it, don't you think? You
know? I mean, because I'm looking at it now and that poster design, I probably thought, I'm not going to put anything else on it. There's no point. Just put that and the guy and that's it.
Crowds it out, doesn't it? Yeah. Anyway, so this is directed by George Tillman Jr., starring Chris Davis as Foreman and Forrest Whitaker as trainer Doc Brodus. Now, this is the story of one of the greatest heavyweight boxers of all time. Now, I don't know how familiar listeners are with boxing. If I just mention Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, Ken Norton, Jimmy Ellis, and George Foreman himself, you had fighters of rare quality and distinction, and they were all in their prime during the 1970s. Now, Foreman won the world title from Joe Frazier, but lost it to Muhammad Ali in a fight famously known as the Rumble in the Jungle. But I guess the bigger part of Foreman's story was coming out of retirement to win the world title again at the age of 45. Overall, it's a solid biopic with a steady pace that ticks all the right boxes. There are no great revelations. Unsurprising, as Foreman himself was executive producer. So there'll be no skeletons rattling here. Chris Davis is very good in the title role, but in many ways, the film belongs to Forrest Whitaker as the battle-hardened trainer. What I like about his performance is that he doesn't overplay the character. It's like Billy Wilder, the director, used to say, less is more. He reins it in and makes a bigger impression as a result. A thoroughly enjoyable film, great soundtrack. If you're a fan of 70s soul and funk, this is the film for you.
There we go. I mean, I love a boxing film. I think we've said this before on the pod. It's a genre upon itself, isn't it? Specifically boxing, I think.
Yeah.
It's got everything cinematic that you kind of want. And I mean, George Foreman is a household name, even over here and even now.
Yeah. I mean, even if you know him as the promoter of the Lean Mean Grilling Machine as well, which he made an awful lot of money out of back in the 80s.
I was doing my best not to bring it up, but I'm glad you did. Cause, you know.
I mean, they mentioned it in the film. So if they mention it in the film, we can mention it here.
It's relevant.
Yeah, there it's relevant. Go. It's current and it's relevant. Now, a very good film. I liked it. I think it's been getting some slightly mixed reviews. I don't know whether people expected to see a bit more dirt being dished, but I think it gave a fairly balanced account of his life, particularly his humble beginnings, coming from a very poor family in a very poor part of Houston in Texas, to winning the Olympic gold medal at Mexico City in 1968, turning professional. The old story of making a fortune, then losing it through bad investments, bad deals, bad management deals, then having to make a comeback in his 40s. It does really read a bit like a Hollywood film script, but it's all true. And I think I know George Foreman's story relatively well enough to say that's a fair account. You know, it. I mean, no pun intended. It doesn't pull any punches. Get it? It had to be done, didn't it? Really? Come on, be honest.
Oh, if I'd have reviewed it, it would have just been full of it. That's all I do. I'm just full of puns. That's all I do.
But you see, the thing is, though, boxing's got lots of great phrases that have entered into our lexicon, haven't they, really? You know, out for the count, beaten to the punch, all that type of thing.
Mm.
But no, a very good film. I really enjoyed it. And it touches a chord with people in some way, because pugilism is the ultimate warrior art, isn't it? And I take it as art because when it's done properly, when you've got two great fighters in the ring, and George Foreman represents a great era for heavyweight boxing in general. So yeah, good stuff. Really enjoyed that.
There you go. Big George Foreman. I'm not going to do the full title because I've already clicked away and I don't want to have to look it up. Now, this next one, I've got this vague feeling that you said you didn't get to see it. But which let's one? Just see if it's the film The Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
You did see it? All right, crack on.
I saw that. Okay, then. So, so what we got then is it's a film directed by Hetty MacDonald, starring Jim Broadbent as Harold and Penelope Wilson as his wife Maureen. When I sat down to write this review, I had to resist the temptation to use phrases like heartwarming, life-affirming. It's that kind of film. It's based on a book by Rachel Joyce and tells the story of Harold and Maureen, who live in quiet retirement on the South Coast. Harold receives a letter from Queenie, who is in a hospice and writing to say goodbye. Ooh, it's quite sad. Anyway, he struggles to write a response. On the way to the post office, he has, what would you call it, an epiphany perhaps, and decides to walk all the way to Berwick-upon-Tweed so he can say goodbye to Queenie in person. Now, to appreciate this film, you need to omit the logic, because the first thing you think is, why doesn't he just get on a train and go and see her, right? But this is Harold's eccentricity at play. He sees the walk as an atonement for all the things he's got wrong in his life. It's a charming film. The story gently unfolds and we learn exactly what the deal is between him and Queenie. And it's not necessarily what you'd expect. We also learn of a troubled relationship with his son, David, which fills in all the blanks. But I would say it's a very British film and a very likable film. Really, really a nice watch.
This feels right up my street. Yeah, I love this is my warm Sunday feeling film.
Absolutely. Yeah. You've nailed it there.
I watched The Fisherman's Friends 2 at the
weekend. Oh, right. Yeah, what do you think of it?
Which, it's not as good as the first one.
They never are.
The first one was good, but the second one, it was very pulling at the strings and trying to make something, I think, that wasn't really there or needed. I go into these sort of films very forgiving and very kind of like, do you know what? I just kind of want the sensation of a film washing over me. Yeah. And that's what I get with that.
Exactly. You want to like it. And the thing is, I think Fisherman's Friends, not as good as the original, of course, but it's so well written and the characters are so well drawn and they're very likable. They have that human quality. And you can't, it's the same thing with the Harold Fry movie. They're just very likable and they do grow on you as people. I like Jim Broadbent.
He's great, isn't he?
Yeah, and I like Penelope Wilton too. What I would say though is that After I write my review, I don't know what you do, but do you write your own review, then read other people's, or what do you do?
It depends. Sometimes, if I'm really struggling, I go and steal someone's review. No, I don't. No, I think sometimes I'll go and read reviews then, when I've seen the film and I've got maybe like my draft, because sometimes you think something, but you can't quite put it into words yet. Yeah. Not that you're trying to steal it, more just trying to shape it in your mind as to what it is that you're trying to write about.
Yeah.
So sometimes, but rarely, I normally like to just post my review and then I'll go read elsewhere.
I'm more or less the same as you. I mean, sometimes reading somebody else's review, you can articulate your own thoughts a bit more, can't you?
Yeah.
I think that's what it boils down to. But usually, I do exactly what you do, but I write my review first, then I start looking at other reviews just to see how close we are in opinions or how far apart we are. Now, I read some of the reviews of the Harold Fry movie, and I have to say I was a little bit disappointed with the kind of the vibe I was getting, because they were saying, well, I the impression I got was that it's a film for older people because the characters are elderly or they're in their 70s. And I find that such a shame to think that because it's character-based and it's good storytelling, people think it won't be of any interest to people under the age of 30. Do you know what I mean? I found that a bit sad, really.
I think they know target demographics, but I do think that's very unfair to put those sort of things out. As I say, I'm an absolute sucker for a soft, warm film, and I'm in my 30s, and I've liked these films for, you know, a long time. I think genre is applicable because people are often drawn to more, you know, some genres more than others depending on their age, but it's the same thing like with animation. It gets pigeonholed, oh, animation is for kids, but it's not, is it, at all?
No, not at all.
It's universal, and I think these stories are universal. It just sometimes they sort of get a bit tied up with their own marketing, but I also think sometimes they lose a bit of their audience because of maybe they're trying to do, like you say, they're doing things that wouldn't make sense to a younger audience, like him not jumping on a train or calling an Uber, or, you know, it's like it doesn't make sense to a younger generation. So maybe there's that, but I still think they can understand that. Like, I think people can like, you know, when I watch a period drama, it's not like, oh, I can't understand this at all, even though I wasn't there. It's like, no, I can understand how they lived like that, and I can understand, people who grew up without phones can understand how people had to get by without a mobile phone.
Exactly.
I'm saying that because I'm seeing him on the trailer inside like one of those classic post boxes, so I'm guessing
that's right.
But I think it's so unfair of these studios and things like that, where, and these marketing departments that kind of make these decisions and say, oh, well, they won't get it, so don't market it to those people. It's like, that's not really fair.
It's not fair, and it's a missed opportunity, I think, because they robbed the film of a much wider appeal because it's so narrow. And I think that is such a shame, because it's the type of film that you know, does make you feel it's a feel good film. And what's wrong with that? I think we need more films like that don't necessarily go for the jugular, right? It's a gentle story that gradually builds and reaches an interesting climax. As I said, I touched on it earlier on, that it's not quite the finale that you imagine, so it surprises you as well. Well, I think it does anyway, so yeah.
Well, moving from one film, shall I say, aimed at an older audience to another, with Book Club 2, the next chapter.
Right. Yeah, Book Club 2. Okay, then. So this is directed by Bill Holderman and stars, take a deep breath here, Diane Keaton, Jane Fonda, Mary Steenburgen, Candice Bergen, Andy Garcia, Don Johnson, and Craig T. Nelson. Phew.
Gosh, that's a cast, isn't it?
I know, it is. I've actually forgotten Hugh Quasey as well, isn't it? So that's an even bigger, more quality cast than you could ever imagine. So it's a sequel to the first Book Club, made in 2018. This time, four friends go on a bachelorette party to Italy as they mark the engagement of Vivian, played by Jane Fonda. Now, it's a great cast, and they do carry the film up to a certain extent. It does, we've just touched on this actually, it does fail the test of all sequels. It's just not as good as the original. In the first film, they read 50 Shades of Grey and went on to show how the book affected their lives, how their relationships were enhanced, shall we say. But this story runs more on fumes. It's just not really enough there to keep it going. Having said that, it's a pleasant watch. You get to see skilled practitioners at work, and it would be less of a film without them. One thing I did mention in the review, that the written review that I have to mention here, though, is that Italy looks absolutely spectacular. It could just as easily be an advert for the Italian film board, tourist board, beg your pardon. Tuscany, Rome, Venice, they look spectacular. Now, it'd be difficult to film Italy and make it look naff. I know that's true, but it does add to the appeal of the film. But it is very lightweight. It is very lightweight, but I think the cast do carry it through just about.
Well, we have got Fast X coming up, and you know they did also film in Rome. So
yeah, that's right.
We'll get into that, but
yeah. But yeah, I mean, a very nice film, but it's not going to be to everyone's taste. And in some ways, we just mentioned Fast X, who were location filming in Italy as well. You couldn't get a more of a contrast, really. But I just like the cast. I think the cast lift it above mediocrity. It would be nothing without them, really. If you put seven or eight lesser actors in those roles, it wouldn't work. I mean, you've got what used to be some very big players there. You know, you've got Jane Fonda and Diane Keaton, Mary Steenburgen. You know, Candice Bergen, maybe not quite such a major player, but these are all really top-notch actors who had their time, but are just jumping on something that did well the first time around. And now they're making the most of a sequel, which doesn't really do it. But I enjoyed it more for the cast and more for the way they interact together. You can tell there's a natural chemistry. They all get on. They all seem like friends. You know, have you ever watched a movie and you think to yourself, they really get on? There's nothing they're not, in some ways, they're not acting because they do seem to be like friends anyway, you know? Do you know the type of thing I mean?
I do. I think, you know, when that chemistry's right, you feel it. You do feel it as an audience, and whether you believe it. I think especially if you're looking at like a, not so much this, but like a romantic film, like you know whether or not you believe it. And funny enough, again, with Fast X, I'm not sure I believe it. I'm not sure I believe they are family. But that doesn't matter. This is what all my review I said with Fast X, it didn't really matter because it's just, you're just there for something else. But anyway, again, we'll get to that. I keep jumping ahead. I'm just so excited. I haven't been to the cinema for a while.
I know. You're hyper, aren't you? I can sense it. Yeah. I know.
So that was Book Club, the next chapter. Now, I'm confused about this next one, Ryan, because it's called The Notebook. I thought that film had come out a long time ago.
No, actually, I replaced it with another film. I got my list, my to see list mixed up.
Okay.
All right. So I replaced it with another one, which is Missing.
Yep.
Now, Missing, this is an interesting one. Now, this film I was actually going to review on the previous podcast, but I didn't have time to see it. But it came out on the 21st of April, and it's still running now. And it's directed by Nicholas D. Johnson and Will Merrick, starring Storm Reid as June and Nia Long as Mother Grace, her Mother Grace. It's an interesting one because it's a genre known as screen life movies, which is visual storytelling where all the events are shown on a computer, a tablet, or a smartphone. Now, the story is fairly simple. Grace goes on a holiday to Colombia with her new partner, Kevin. She leaves June a list of do's and don'ts. But a teenager with parents away, well, you make the most of it, don't you? Anyway, June goes to the airport to meet them on the day of their return, but they don't show up. She grows increasingly anxious and realises they've gone missing. Back home, June begins to track their movements online. And you really don't realise how easy it is to find people now. None of us can fly under the radar anymore, which is a blessing and a curse in equal measure. The film itself has real pace and sometimes feels like a blur. If you're IT literate, which I'm not particularly, you'll pick up a lot more from it. Because I was thinking, well, how can you do that? I didn't know you could do that. I was thinking that all the way through the film. but it very compact and very cleverly put together, and a film well worth catching if you can before it goes onto stream.
Funny enough, you said about this film, and I thought, oh, I've already seen this. And it's because, which I haven't, by the way, the reason I thought I had is I saw a film 2018 called Searching. Have you seen that film with John
Cho? It's actually I have seen it, and it's made by the same team of directors and writers.
I was going to say, because if not, they are really trying to rip off this other film.
it's the same directors. Now you've mentioned that, it's reminded me, because when I was doing my research on this, it reminded me of the fact that I saw that film when it was first on, but I didn't connect the two. But yeah, you're right, it is. It's very similar. And it's written and directed by the same people. Yeah.
Are you sure? Because it doesn't say that it is on IMDb. But, oh, am I looking at the wrong... Oh, no, you're all right. Sev Ohanian.
I thought so.
Because even the posters are, like, identical. They've got this blue kind of screens everywhere. Yeah. It sounds great. I love those sort of films when they're done well. They can be awful because, you know, no one wants any more time looking at screens. But when they're done and they're compelling, I actually think it's a genre that could be very adaptable and very relevant to audiences at the moment. We all kind of are living a lot more in these screens. Yeah. So, interesting.
I have to say, though, the genre itself was new to me. I'd never heard of it previously. Screen life, but I see what it's getting at, though, because they're containing all the action on a couple of screens. But a lot of the time you don't notice it, because when the film's playing and you're watching it, you'll see her working on screen, but she'll bring up a news report or an ABC report or something, and it doesn't feel like it's necessarily you're watching a screen on a screen on a screen kind of thing. But if you see what I'm getting at, but you don't necessarily, it doesn't necessarily come across that way. But very good film, very different, very unusual. But yeah, it's a genre that I think will grow. But it has to be properly done. And as you say, we spend so much of our lives staring at screens. All right, when you go to the movies, you're staring at one big screen. But they're kind of, the screen itself splits into three or four. But it's scary, again, it's that word that I sometimes come back to with a film like this. It's scary what you can learn about people online, what you can do about online. We are really living the Truman Show now, aren't we?
Well, especially with the rise of AI. I mean, we're all doomed now anyway.
Don't get me started about AI.
Ooh. Yeah, let's enjoy it while we can. Right, Brian, that was four films. Did you do another one, or was it Fast X?
I did another one, yeah.
Go on then.
I did. Oh, yeah. Right, okay. It is, what was the fifth one? Yeah. It's called Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
Now, you're right, Brian. You're having a little turn.
Yeah, you think I'm having a moment. No. That's really what the film's called. It came out actually on Friday, on the 19th of May. So it's just come out. Now, this is directed by Kelly Freeman Craig and stars Abby Ryder Fortson as Margaret. Rachel McAdams plays her mother, Barbara. And we also get the brilliant Kathy Bates as Grandma Sylvia. Now, this is a family drama that gently tugs at the heartstrings, but it's never sentimental or predictable. Margaret is 12 years old and about to enter sixth grade. However, her world is turned upside down when her dad is promoted and they move to New Jersey. This means a new school and new classmates. Margaret is quickly welcomed into a private club headed by Nancy, who, to her horror, is the owner of a 32A bra. The girls set each other a series of challenges, including who will be the first to get a period. The pressure cranks up even more for Margaret, whose family is divided by religion. A Jewish father and a Christian mother puts her in the middle of a domestic war. However, a teacher, Mr. Benedict, makes a suggestion. Write a project about religion and what it means to her. I absolutely love this film. It's the film of the month for me, out of the five that I've reviewed.
Wow.
It's my favourite. It takes the girl reaching puberty storyline and adds a unique twist. What does religion mean to a 12-year-old? Is God listening to her hopes, fears and aspirations? Which is where the title comes from. Originality is such a rare thing in films these days. You know, it naturally stands out from the rest because of that. It does something different. It takes a well-worn storyline and think, right, how can we present this to the audience in a different way? It's based on a book as well, but I think it was very clever. I think the girl that plays Margaret, she's the type of child actor, Abby Ryder-Fortson. She's the type of actor you think, God, if she can survive growing up, she's going to be a massive star. She really is, you know. But really enjoyed it. Very good.
Fantastic. Well, those are your five that Brian has very kindly gone and seen and reviewed. We're going to move to the premiere that we were both able to attend, which was Fast X.
Yeah.
And I myself am a Fast and Furious fan. Would you classify yourself as one, Brian?
I'm probably on the way. You know,
on the way.
I'm on the way to being a fan. I think this is probably the best one for me so far.
Wow.
Maybe because it's still fresh in my mind. Maybe when the next one comes out, which it inevitably will do, maybe that'll be my favourite. But but yeah, look, I think it's difficult not to like a film like Fast and Furious because it's so visually arresting that you can't help but like it. You know, I mean, they're in the entertainment business and it is about entertainment. So, yeah. You know, I'd class myself as a fan, but probably not in the advanced stage that you are, shall we say.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I know everything that's wrong with the films. Like, I've had some people kind of have big chats with me about them saying, you know this is rubbish and this is rubbish. Like, yeah, I know it's rubbish, but yeah, that's not why I like them. If I mean, my eyes roll nonstop when I'm watching these films because the dialogue is just atrocious. The dialogue is like it was written by someone in the 90s who was on a sugar rush. But
yeah,
it's got that kind of, first off, it's pure cinema. You get about 10 times more enjoyment out of this by watching it on a big screen than you would watching it at home. And the screening that we were in, at least 5 or 6 times the audience erupted into applause and yelling and because of things that are happening. And that's the kind of experience I think that you only get with this sort of film at the cinema. So it's got all that going. In terms of the actual plot, I mean, I was a little bit sketchy in terms of the last couple of films because I think I've only seen them once and they went in and went out like as they always do.
Yeah.
But essentially, Dom and his family, they're all kind of settled and they're working with the CIA and all that lot. Like, they're kind of now on the same level. Yeah. The character, I can't remember his name, the one who Tyrese Gibson plays, Roman, is now kind of going to be leading operations. They're about to go and do one in Rome, as we've mentioned.
Yep.
But at the beginning of the film, we essentially see clips from the previous series of films of Fast and Furious, whereby a character we didn't know was there was actually there the whole time. And it's played by...
In plain sight,
yeah. He was, wasn't it? And he's not a small guy either. I'm surprised we didn't notice him. Jason Momoa, who plays Dante. And did you think there's some kind of connection with, like, you know, the volcano, like Dante's Inferno?
I guess so. That's the reference point, isn't it, really, I think? Yeah.
I thought that's what they were doing, but I didn't want to kind of put words in their mouth.
It looks like that to me, to be honest.
So Dante was the son of the bank manager who got robbed in film 5, I think, where they're pulling the safe across the city in the two cars. So he is then has been plotting against Dominic Toretto, Vin Diesel's character, for many years and has orchestrated his doom, shall we say, in a series of incredible, as you might expect, stunts and scenes and sequences that just kind of, they don't stop. It's absolutely relentless.
It is definitely
just keeps coming. And essentially this is definitely part of at least 2 films. I think it might be 3 films. I think there's been some rumors about being 3 films. Whether or not that's then going to be the end, I don't know. I think it makes too much money for anyone to say just yet, but this is all now part of Dominic's potential biggest foe that he's faced, who always seems to be at least 3 steps ahead in this film. Like, he just seems to know exactly what's going to happen every single time.
A bit too clever for his own good, really. You think, how on earth can he be that forward thinking, you know, to think that quickly? And when you're mucking about with cars and explosives and guns and what have you, it doesn't leave much room for error, does it, really, when you think
I mean, there was at least 3 or 4 times when the Dante character could easily have been killed in the film, and he isn't. Yeah. But I just thought, you know, I'm not going to tell you how to do your job, Vin Diesel. But,
yeah, well, yeah.
There's loads of subplots in this film as well. There's so many subplots because you've got Charlize Theron, her character, Cypher, is kind of involved because she's the first one who kind of warns Dominic about Dante. Yeah. But then she gets kind of taken away to a... I don't know, some kind of secure facility. And Michelle Rodriguez is there. I'm trying not to give away too many spoilers, but there will be spoilers in this review. You've then got John Cena, who is on a road trip with Vin Diesel, Dominic Toretto's son, because he's trying to protect them. Then you've got the three of them that have ended up in London, which is like the ludicrous Tej character, Ramsey, played by Natalie Emmanuel, and Roman. Ended up there. So everyone's kind of split up at this point. It's very much kind of globe-trotting again for the Fast and Furious. And what did you think of that?
Well, look, I think that, generally speaking, the film itself is jaw-droppingly good entertainment. It's just no question. It's visually stunning. The plot itself, I think they leave a lot of strands running, don't they? Which is obviously a sign that there's going to be another film, maybe two or three. But you know, I think the plot, though, such as it is, gets buried by the visuals. That it almost seems incidental what the storyline is and where the plot might be going. You're completely distracted by the visuals. Now, I think it's all about the stunts and all about the visuals. To be fair, it doesn't pretend to be anything else. It's very honest about what it's setting out there. But look, we sat there watching it, didn't we? And you think, God, that's incredible. And it was, as you say, relentless. You think, how on earth do they do that? It's really challenging the laws of physics, some of the things they were doing. And I think with a film like this, I think I'd even say the stuntmen and stuntwomen are more the stars than Vin Diesel is. But you can't argue with the entertainment value there, can you, really?
No, and I think, again, it's what people know. They know about what they're going into by this point. I was talking to a friend who he likes the early films in the series where it's more about the cars and the racing. And and that could have been an interesting franchise, you know, where if they did go down that route where it was a bit more gritty and more underground, whereas this is more in line with like a James Bond kind of film and all
it
that
is,
sort of stuff.
Yeah, it is kind of going that way. You look at something like Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
The franchise there. It's gone so far away from what it was meant to be that you've almost forgotten what Mission Impossible was all about. That Mission Impossible was based on a brilliant TV show from the 60s and 70s, but you would never...
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I know that where it is now, where it started out, and it's the same thing with Fast and Furious, is that they've taken it off on a route that they know is going to work, that they know it's going to please the punters, but that I think in some ways, when the next one comes out, they've got to try and top what they've done in this one. You know, it's got to get progressively more adventurous. Otherwise, you're not going to get any joy if you're just repeating what you've already done. You know, I mean, my overview of a film like Fast and Furious, great entertainment, I enjoyed it, but I could easily have said the same thing about the previous 9 films, because it's visually stimulating. You know, my reference point for action movies, as I'm sure you know, is Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, Bad Boys, that type of film. Yeah. You see, what they do is that they give you the visual stimulation, but they give you strong characters and they give you a good script that's funny and engaging. So it gives you a bit more than just the visuals. And that's where I think Fast and Furious could try a little bit harder. But then again, maybe it doesn't really matter, Chris, at the end of the day. Because you go by how much you've been entertained. So in our function as critics, we say, well, look, this is where it might be falling down. But the bottom line is, are people entertained by it? And you say, hell yeah, of course, absolutely.
Well, I don't think if they haven't put that on the poster, I think they should. You know, hell yeah. Oh. There
hell
we go.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
So, well, Fast and Furious, it's all about family. And what do you need in a family? You need the mother. And that's where we're going next.
Oh, that is a seamless link. Oh, I am impressed.
Boom. And I made that up off the top of my head.
Damn, that is good. That is so good.
There we go.
Oh, God. Honestly, I'm not worthy now. Oh, no, really.
Starring Jennifer. You've seen this, right?
Yeah.
So on Netflix this month, I believe, May, if you're listening to it now, and stars Jennifer Lopez. You want to give the synopsis on this one, Brian?
Let's get my notes up. Yeah, okay. So this is on Netflix then. It's directed by Nicky Caro. Stars Jennifer Lopez as the mother. I don't think she actually has a character name, does she? They just call her the mother, don't they?
Yeah, which I think is very telling, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So Lucy Payes plays her daughter Zoe, and Joseph Fiennes plays the arch villain Adrian Lovell, but they call him Lavelle, don't they? See, us Brits, we'd say Lovell, but they call him Lavelle.
You can imagine him in the schoolyard in the UK. Oi, Lovell, yeah, what are you doing, mate? Oi, Lovell.
Yeah, I know. So, now the mother is an ex-army vet, a trained assassin, who has crossed two heavy juicy villains, one of whom is Adrian Lavelle. She later gives birth to a baby girl who immediately becomes a target. The FBI arrange her adoption and give her a new identity. The mother is banished to deepest Alaska. But the baddies find her daughter, called Zoe, and this brings the mother out of hiding to face her demons. Now, I really enjoyed this. This, I think, is top-notch entertainment. It really is. For one thing, how does Jennifer Lopez manage to look so young? You know, I mean, she's 53 or 54 or something. I mean, she's either got a very good plastic surgeon or she's got Peter Pan's genes. Honestly, I mean, again, visuals are great. The stunts are great. She is kind of believable in the role. There's no reason why she wouldn't be. But what struck me about this film, Chris, though, was that if it had been made 30 years ago or 20 years ago, this film would be called The Father. Yep. And the title role would be played by a man. But now we've got the mother, title role played by a woman. Now, the buzz phrase is all about equality now, isn't it? You know, and there you've got a great example of equality because the lead is female, strong, powerful, determined, a leading role that would have been played by a man. Do you know what I'm getting at? And you think, isn't that good, though?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Because when I was watching it, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was excellent.
Yeah.
That what I liked about it that it felt, yeah, this feels like it's Liam Neeson's role, right? It feels like Liam Neeson is going to play this role.
Yeah.
And if not, you've got someone far more interesting. You know, we've seen Liam do all those films already, and he's done so many of them now. But this felt fresh. It felt a bit newer, but also still believable. It didn't feel like they were shoehorning in, oh, it's a female character, but you know, it should be a man. It's like, no, it should be a woman because the whole point of it is that, you know, especially in the earlier scenes where there's a very disturbing situation in which she gets attacked whilst pregnant, actually, and her maternal instincts are coming out through the film. They're playing on that, like with the, when she's in Alaska and there's these wolves that are around and they're very protective. And it's playing on a lot of themes that actually we haven't seen a lot, especially not within the action thriller kind of genre. I found it very engaging, very compelling. I was so surprised to see a lot of negative reviews around The Mother. I thought, really? I thought it was much better than that than what I'd seen.
Yeah, it does surprise me. I mean, everyone's got a view, haven't they? You know, everyone's got an opinion. But, you know, I think to criticize that type of film, the way they've approached it, the way it's been made, you know, you buy into the character, you believe the character, you believe it's happened, you know, anything's possible, you know, beneath that, you know, the surface that we live in our lives of convention, routine, respectability, there's an undercurrent, right? There are things going on that we don't know about, right? So it's perfectly possible that a character like the mother could exist somewhere, right? And could be a skilled marksman, be skilled in martial arts, who can take care of herself and can come out of hiding to protect a daughter that she's never met. You know, it's keeping a sufficient grip on reality, but it's kind of outrageous enough to say, wow, that's a bit of a jump, but it's possible, it's feasible. And I like storytelling where it's kind of out there a little bit, but you can believe it, it's kind of feasible, you know, it's possible, it's likely, you know, I like that. So yeah, I'm surprised by the negative reviews, because I don't know what else you would really want in a film, in a good action movie, you know. And it's also got Kate Bush on the soundtrack, This Woman's Work, which is a great track as well.
Yeah, that works really well in that scene. Yeah.
You know, at the end, when it's just sort of, when the closing titles are coming up, it's Kate Bush, yeah. This Woman's Work, which is a great song.
Yeah, because I always watch with subtitles on, and when you see the lyrics over the top of what's playing, actually, that's very, very telling, very potent.
Yeah, very apt. Yeah,
definitely. What I really liked as well was the fact that they didn't drag out the fact that Zoe was her daughter, in terms of, because it could have easily been that film where, you know, Jennifer Lopez is being very protective, but the girl doesn't really know why.
Yeah.
But the girl's really clue her in quite early on, and she guesses. She's like, "Are you my mother?" Like, she kind of works it out, and I liked that. They didn't make her like this like fool of a child. It was no, she actually is quite formidable herself.
That's right. She's mature enough and intelligent enough to know that, yeah, I know what's going on here. But you see, the thing is, again, that's where the kind of the notion of common sense kicks in a little bit. And you can say to the audience, yeah, we thought of that bit there, you know. So we've made her a bit wiser, that she's not going to be quite that naive. I mean, she's 12 or 13, isn't she? So she's old enough to sort of work out what's going on, right? And I don't think it's possible that someone in that situation would know absolutely nothing about their background at school. Something will get out. You know, I don't think anything can stay secret for very long. And that's partly what it trades on. But, you know, great visuals. I think Alaska looks amazing. You know, of all the locations they could have gone to, I mean, Alaska's spectacular, that kind of purity and that simplicity. And that scene that you mentioned with the wolves looking after the cubs, when she's confronted by the wolf and the wolf sees her, she sees her cubs. You know, there's almost that trade-off between, you know, she appreciates what being a mother is, you know. And I think there's nothing that's said or it's written, but it's just visuals. And that's beautiful to look at, I think.
Really good. That's the mother. Definitely one to watch. I do hope more people seek it out, because I think it's well worth your time.
Yeah.
And that's your streaming pick for this month. We're going to move on now to a couple of short indie films, because, well, we love doing it. And also, the filmmakers reached out to me on my Twitter feed, which is pinned to my profile if you want to go to there and have a look at some of the other films that people have asked us to review. And we've already done a few of them on the podcast, so listen to those episodes too. Do everything. Listen to everything. Share everything. Like everything. Yep. That's all you got to do. That's all we want, isn't it, Brian? We just want everyone to pay us all their attention. Yeah. That's all we want.
Our needs in life are simple, aren't they? Really?
Exactly.
You
know?
Yeah.
You've seen both of these,
yeah,
Brian? So it doesn't matter where I start.
No, not at all. But
let's go with Imbass, directed by Zan Gilmore. And this was an interesting short. This was the first one that I watched, so that's why I'm doing it in this order. And it's about this writer. He's a would-be writer, and he's on a road trip with his, I think it's his friend, but I'm not sure if it's his friend or partner, but they're on their way somewhere. He is very obsessed with sort of Scottish mythology, I guess, in terms of what's going on. And then he ends up speaking to this mystic character, and she tells him of a gateway to another world, which is through water. And he's completely obsessed with this. Meanwhile, his friend is getting kind of increasingly worried about him and decides to follow him. Yeah. I'm going to leave it there with the synopsis because I don't want to give any more away than that.
I know.
But what did you think of this one, Brian?
I liked it. I think it's very good. It's very dark. It's visually very arresting.
Mm.
I think Rachel, the friend, who we think might be the partner, but
possibly it says friend on the synopsis on IMDb, so I'm going with that.
Yeah, okay. We'll stick with friend. You see, I think the way Rachel is reacting is she kind of represents us, the audience, because it kind of instills a sense of foreboding. The whole sort of setup. I mean, it's beautifully put together, and you know. She's sort of saying, "What, are you nuts? Are you raving nuts? Are you mad doing this?" Because it scares her. But he feels the need to immerse himself in Celtic mythology. That's his thing. And as it progresses, you feel that sense of foreboding and that fear for him, and it does feel quite claustrophobic. The more you kind of get into the story, but. It's very well done, and it leaves a mark. It leaves a kind of a mark in you afterwards because of the imagery, and I find that quite arresting. And it does leave, as I say, it leaves a mark on you. But it's very good. It's very good, but it's very dark as well, though, and not just in terms of the lighting being quite dark, but a very dark story and lots of sort of Celtic crosses sort of emerging as we go along. So, but yeah. It's very good. It's very good. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, I picked out a few things that I really enjoyed about the film, which first of all was the chemistry between the couple or the friends. I thought that was really good. Enjoyed, as we were talking earlier about this, about whether or not you believed it, and I believed them. I thought their performance was really good. Love the locations. I always love these sort of locations when you've got the landscape forming part of the story, you know. It's like this isolation. I tell it reminded me of, do you remember during the festival we watched, I think it was called Brother Troll or something like that,
the one that was based in the Faroe Islands.
It is
a bit like that,
a bit like that, just in terms of them being cut off from everyone else, because you don't get that really a lot in society anymore in terms of like, you know, that in the mainstream. So when we see these films set in these places, I think it really adds a good depth to the story. It really helps it. Love that. And then the last thing was the music. I liked the music where it was a bit more fantasy and ethereal, like it kind of had a weird vibe. I wasn't so sure about when this like electronic dance track comes in. There's a bit where the music pumps in with when he's in the water and stuff, and I was like, I'm not sure if that worked for me, but I liked the other music that was being used. I don't know, it's an interesting shift.
It's and you do wonder whether that was meant to signpost something significant in the story, where the incidental music changes, but I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, it did seem to stick out more than it should do, or maybe it was meant to. You see, I often take that as a kind of a something significant, but it might not be. Maybe it's a kind of a double bluff. Perhaps. See, I overthink things all the time.
That's what we're here for, Brian. We're here to overthink all this, aren't we? And overtalk it. We overtalk everything.
Overtalk it, it's got to be done, hasn't it, really?
But yeah, thank you to Elizabeth McNally for sending that to me. She's in the film. She plays Fiona, who is the sort of mystic that he meets.
Oh, she does, right. Okay.
Yeah, so she was the one who got in touch with us to review the film. And I'm very glad she did, because enjoyed it a lot. So that's Imbass. I'm not sure if you can see it anywhere, trying to look at our link, was it public or not? I don't know. It's on Vimeo, but I don't know if it's password protected. It's not. It's up a year ago.
No.
So you should be at Vimeo.com. Search for Imbass, which is IMBAS. I'm probably saying that wrong, but that's online for you to watch and enjoy. So that's that one. The second short film that we watched and are now reviewing was called Lautier, which is that how you'd pronounce that, or Lautier?
Lautier.
Lautier. This was also very good, different, and in the opening credits, so this isn't really like a spoiler, but you realize that Lautier is an anagram of ritual. And
do you know what? I never spotted that.
Did you miss it? Yeah. Yeah. So the letters all kind of come across. And I was like, oh. And it's, there is this, it's kind of set, I guess, again, in a fantasy / fairy tale kind of world, where you've got this community who are plagued by a terror that comes and takes them. They're people that are sinful. It comes and very violently rips them out of society, I guess. Because no one in this society, in this community, has proven themselves to be innocent enough for this demon to go away. But there could be these two girls who may be the answer, who are going to journey, I think, to the to a place where they can stop this demon. And they go through the landscape. It's very sort of tranquil and serene at times. It feels a bit like a fairy tale, but then it gets increasingly worrying, I guess, and troubling.
I know, it's like that, isn't it?
What did you think of this one, Brian?
I liked it. I thought it was very good. Again, a bit like Imbass, it creates a great atmosphere, but very kind of claustrophobic, very foreboding. To me, anything set in a forest or a wood is quite intimidating anyway.
It's that terrifying, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but it is, though. But you look at it through the prism of film and TV, bad things always seem to happen in a forest or in a wood, because there's that sense of isolation, of being alone. Or they're not alone, there's the two of them there. But because it's outdoors, it's in a forest or a wood, however you want to look at it, but that is scary in itself. That is intimidating by itself. It's that sense of being alone. And when you look at the way the intro sets the story up, that the demon has to feed off, you know, the demon feeds off something or someone that's pure, and that's what gets rid of the demon. And you know something's going to happen. And you get increasingly concerned when you think, oh, something bad's going to happen in a minute. It is. And they kind of keep on walking, and one of them says, now it's time. And then you tense up because you can't, do you know what I mean? You kind of get ready for it, you know. But it's very good, you know, it is very well done. And it is, would you call it horror? Would you call it, does it fit in the horror genre, do you think?
I think it does. It's not labelled as such, but I would, because that's the first thing that comes to my mind when I think about the film. And I think about the themes and the way in which they're presenting this story. I mean, it's got a very big fantasy element to it as well.
Yeah.
But I would say it's got horror elements and a horror vibe to it. Yeah, I think so. But not in a way that's going to be very off-putting. It's not trying to...
No,
upset you in any way. It's more just important for the story to unfold in, I think.
Yeah, it's gripping. It takes you along. It's very similar to Imbass in a way. I think Imbass has elements of horror about it as well. There's nothing wrong with that, but it makes the narrative even more gripping in a way. The story they're trying to tell is taking you along on a, it's not fear, but it's anticipation, isn't it? I think that's the essence of horror, is anticipating what's coming next. And they both do that. They both do that in their own way, but it's a slightly different approach to storytelling. But very good. You know, very impressed that they've managed to tell a coherent story in a very short space of time, which is always the test that we give it. Does it tell a story that's relatively end-to-end and it makes sense and it's complete enough to be a story by itself? And it is. So
and it's something different as well. I thought it was quite a different story to have told. I liked it. I liked it a lot. And Martin Hardwick, who's the co-director with Georgia Conlon, who Conlon wrote the film, he got in touch. So Martin Hardwick got in touch with me about reviewing it. The film itself is actually available, I believe, on Amazon Prime. So quite easy for people to watch if it's still there. Sometimes I say these things and then it's gone.
But it's always the way, isn't it?
Yeah, much like our nostalgia pick this month. But Lautier should still be on Amazon Prime if you want to watch it. It's, again, not long. It's less than 20 minutes, I think. So you got plenty of time to watch
it. Doesn't take up your time, too much of your time at all. Yeah.
That's that. We are now going to move on to our nostalgia pick. Now, I picked this film for two reasons. One, A good friend of mine always recommended it to me, kept saying it was really, really good, and I watched it years ago, and I just didn't like it. Me and my wife both watched it, and I thought, I didn't like it, didn't get it, did not get all the buzz. A lot of people had said they loved it. The second reason I picked it was because it was, emphasis on the was, on BBC iPlayer, which was part of the reason of this podcast, was to give you films that you guys could listen at, watch. It has now disappeared from iPlayer, unfortunately, but luckily I had a DVD copy of it in my garage, because that's where I keep my DVDs now.
Fair enough.
And I think, Brian, you went to the trouble of renting it.
I did, yeah, because, I mean, when we spoke about it on the previous podcast, I'd never seen it. I didn't see it when it came out. And I thought, well, I really want to see this now. And when I realised it wasn't on iPlayer anymore, and I saw it was on Amazon Prime, so I thought, why not? What the hell? Let's have a look at it. Let's test its mettle. Let's see how good it is or not.
There we go. And I am willing to throw my hands up and say, I was wrong. This is a good film. I very much enjoyed it on a second watch. I don't know what happened the first time. I think maybe I wasn't expecting something quite as bleak as it is. But actually, this now doesn't look so bleak in the world that we live in now. This feels very much like I could look out my window and see this now.
Well, yeah. but isn't it strange how society moves on, and in the light of experience, it doesn't seem quite as frightening as it once was, but we're learning to live with various challenges that confront us.
It's weird as well, seeing films that, you know, this was released in 2006, and they are showing a version of the UK in 2027. So almost, you know, over 20 years in the future, but us now being in 2023, it's strange seeing these visions of dystopia that are, you know, so close to where we are now in our lives, that, you know, how much that, I don't know whether or not they do affect you, because, all right, yeah, maybe this isn't what the UK looks like, but there are places in the world that still are going through incredibly tough times, and what's being showcased. Because the idea of the film is that the whole world has somehow become infertile, and babies just aren't happening. They just suddenly stop happening. And, you know, like the film starts with the world's youngest person kind of being killed in a mob.
That's right.
And he's not, he's not that old. He's 18. But there's no one younger than him. And so then you've got Clive Owen, who's kind of just trying to get by in life, but we realise that he's linked to an activist played by Julianne Moore, who needs his help because someone that they've, because she's part of this activist group, they have found someone who has become pregnant and is quite late in the term, so is imminently going to give birth. So they want to try and get her to safety away from the government, who seems to be very corrupt and evil, but can we trust this group? Because why is Julianne Moore getting Clive Owen involved? And essentially that film is him getting involved. I think that's a terrible synopsis, but that's the best I can do giving away too much of the plot.
No, it's good. That's a pretty good summation as far as I can see. Like you, I really enjoyed it. I mean, this is the first time I've actually seen the film. And I was very impressed by it. It's... in a way, it plugs into our very deepest fears, because if we think of a cataclysmic event, it might be a pandemic or a virus, something that scientists can deal with. But in children and men, women are becoming fertile. The human race is no longer able to reproduce and is slowly dying out. And that is scary. But it, as you say, I think in light of what's happened since then, where we've had the pandemic, we've had COVID-19, in some ways it takes the edge off it a bit, but it's still powerful. It's still very affecting, I think. It might have affected me a lot more if I'd have seen it when it first came out. But what I did think was very clever about the film, though, was that they would take landmarks in London, like Fleet Street, where the bomb went off. That was in Fleet Street. And they also feature Regent Street. But you can see it's Fleet Street or it's Regent Street, but they've kind of toned it down to an extent where there is a sense of anarchy here, because, you know, the human race is slowly dying out, and they have this issue with immigration. And it's throwing all kinds of ideas at you, all kinds of sort of notions and concepts. The The only thing I found slightly irritating, and it's nothing to do with the film as such, but the story doesn't really explain in any sort of detail why it happened in the first place. Because, you know, there is the human project, and they're researching into the cause of infertility, but it doesn't seem to elaborate any further.
See, I quite like that. When I saw the bit, they were talking about some kind of panel that someone had been on, and they started saying, oh, you know, they're trying to explain what happened, and there was all the usual theories, which was all different things like gamma rays, and I don't know, I can't remember what else they listed, but it was like about five or six different things that could have caused it. And what I liked about that was, having just gone through obviously COVID and the pandemic, was you had all these people trying to spout theories as to what was really going on, and how all of that confusion and all of that mistrust with what people are saying and what scientists might say, I think that works. And you know, this predating that by so much was really powerful. I think a film like this as well is easier to watch than something that's going to deal with, say, like a virus or something, because it's just maybe a little bit too close to home. But because so many of the themes are so recurring in what we've gone through, that I don't know, maybe I just found it more powerful this time. I love the there's a few bits I really love, but first off, there was a bit of graffiti on one of the walls which said, "Last one left, remember to turn off the light," or something like that. I thought, oh, that is genius. And then there's another scene where they're in the car and they get roadblocked by this group, and then the car then has to reverse, and the groups are attacking them, and the whole scene just doesn't quit. The camera carries and goes. So many things happen in that scene. I won't say kind of what happens, but it was just magnificent. Amazing bit of filmmaking.
Yeah, it was. It was very good. It was very well sort of well planned, well thought out, and very brilliantly constructive, you know. And it kind of enters at a point in the film where they kind of think, right, we need to pick up the pace a little bit here now. We need to put something in that's going to give the viewer a bit of a jolt. And I think that's what that particular scene does. But, yeah, I was very impressed with it. And as I say, it's a P.D. James novel as well, isn't it? P.D. James used to write all the mystery thrillers. You know,
I didn't even know that as well until I saw it this time. Because my mum reads a lot of P.D. James, and I was like, oh, I didn't know that at all. And I'd be interested to see what the book is like, to be honest.
Well, that was going to be my next point, really, because now I really want to read the book.
Mm.
You know, I mean, almost always you're going to be disappointed if you... I always think that you should either read the book or see the film. Never see both, because you'll probably be disappointed. But I really want to read the book on which this film was based. I mean, for P.D. James, it was really left of centre for it. She's done something completely different to what she normally did. And this is from the writer who created Adam Dalgliesh. And you couldn't get more different, really, could it? But, yeah, I was impressed with it. And a nice cameo by Michael Caine as well.
Yeah, he plays a really cool character, actually.
Yeah, Jasper.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get used to Michael Caine with really long hair past his shoulders.
I know, I don't think it worked for him, if I'm honest. It was a bit distracting for me.
Yeah, it wasn't a good look for him, was it, really? But, yeah, I mean, I'd recommend it, definitely recommend it. I think you set it alongside the pandemic. You see, you keep on thinking, the template you have in the mind, your own mind, is a pandemic. But to me, to watch a film like this is more of a nightmare scenario than the pandemic, because there is a way of fighting the pandemic, you know. And that's why I kind of, when I was watching it, I had that kind of rush of concern. You think, right, they're not offering me any explanation as to why this has happened, you know. And yeah, but as you say, though, it could well be that kind of gives it more of an edge, because there are no easy answers there. That it does give rise to conspiracy theories, which maybe is probably what makes that society descend into more chaos, because nobody knows why. You know, people know what the outcome, what the fallout is, and what the effects are, but not what the cause is. So maybe that's what does give it its edge. But, you know, I'm into knowing all about this sort of stuff, Chris. You know, why did it happen? You know, but it leaves you wanting more, I guess. You know, that's what a good film should do.
Absolutely. And a good film it is. I'll hold my hands up. I will admit defeat. I was wrong. And that's what's great about this section of the podcast, because it's given me a chance to revisit some films, have a reason to revisit some of these films.
Yeah,
and yeah, Children of Men, albeit very, very bleak, but also very, very good.
Yes, that's excellent. Absolutely.
So I'm going to pick our nostalgia pick for next month now, because...
Drum roll.
I think we need something funnier, lighter, because we've been through a lot. I'm going to go with 1988. Tom Hanks film. See if you can guess what it is. 1988, yep. See if I mean, that's all I'm giving you so far, just the year.
I'm not going to look it up. I could Google it, but I'm not going to.
Directed by Penny Marshall. Not sure if that helps.
Has he been in a film directed by Penny Marshall? Obviously he has.
And it also stars Elizabeth Perkins.
Is it Big?
It is Big. You got that pretty quick. I thought I was going to have to give you loads more. It's currently on Disney Plus. So guys and girls and everyone else, anyone listening, this is currently on Disney Plus. It may not be by the time we get there. And I don't think I have a DVD copy of Big, so I'll have to rent it if it falls off. But I'm hoping that they'll keep it on, because I haven't seen this probably since I was a kid. I don't think so. My brother used to love watching this film, and I wasn't always into it. So I'll be interested to see how I feel about it now as a 35-year-old. So I'll let you know in the next episode.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the film since it came out, so it will be like seeing the film for the first time for me. I mean, you know, when you look, you and I were film buffs, aren't we? We see literally hundreds of films, and you hear a film title and you think, oh yeah, I've seen that. But you know, if it's that long ago since you've seen it, for me it'd be like seeing it first time, you know.
Oh yeah, 100%. To be honest, now I have this, so films I've seen ages ago I can't remember, films I've seen very recently I forget very quickly. It's the films in the middle that are kind of stuck with me, the films that I maybe watched in my sort of late teens, 20s, where I'm like, I can remember those all right. But yeah, what did we review today? The Mother? What's that about? I remember, you know. That's not true. I can still remember The Mother.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah,
it's, but it is true. Like, I find that your brain is like this kind of bucket that can hold that stuff, but new stuff just drops out and old stuff seems to be leaking from the bottom. I don't know. That's the best metaphor I can come up with. We're going to review Big because we love a bit of Tom Hanks anyway. He's an absolute legend. But also,
have you dreamt about him lately?
I haven't.
No.
He does pop up sometimes, but he's always quite it's quite nice. But then in that one dream where he was trying to get me involved in some kind of scheme, I've lost a bit of trust. Maybe that's why I've picked this subliminally.
Yeah, he's ruined it for you, hasn't he? He's just ruined it now.
Yeah. What's the big idea, Hanks? Hey, come on. That's the best I could do with that.
Yeah, no, I look forward to seeing that. As I say, I've not seen it since it came out. So.
Yep. And you've got Disney Plus, have you?
I have, yes.
Just to let you know, listeners, we don't have any kind of affiliations with any of these platforms. No. That's why I kind of jump around quite a lot. I have a bit of a distrust now of iPlayer, so I'm not going to be recommending them for a while.
It's sneaky, that, though, isn't it? How
could they do that to
taking me? It off like that, you know. Best laid plans, Chris.
Best laid plans.
These things are sense of trias.
So that's your lot for this episode. And it's, what an episode. Wow, it's been huge. It's been bigger than Fast X, to be honest. We've put more in here, more stunts, more special effects. Brian's completely green screened, that's why you can't see him. And we've been in your ears for over an hour now, so I think it's best that we let you all carry on with your days. But thank you very much for listening. It's been UK Film Club. Loved having you here. We hope to have you here next month. And stay good, stay big. Is that thing?
Stay- Stay Big. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that could be a new one.
Stay
yeah.
Big. It could have some connotations I don't want to hear about. So,
I've got to say, you've said it now, haven't you? Really?
Yeah. but yeah, until next time.
Bye for now.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.